Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Elixir podcast, where we cover the news of the community and learn from each other. My name is Mark Erickson.
I'm Cade Ward.
And I'm David Bernheisel.
Let's jump into the news. First up, the Erlang EEP 68 has been accepted. So if you're like, I don't remember what that is. So that is the new JSON module that is written in Erlang that is directly developed into the OTP runtime, making it part of the new standard library. So it'll just be available to us in Elixir as well, using the colon JSON module to be able to interact with. And we heard previously on social media from Mikhail Muscala that Elixir might get its idiomatic wrapper for it through the JSON library. So that JSON would say, oh, if you have OTP 27, I will use that. But if you don't, I will fall back to the current approach that it's been using, which is pure Elixir.
That'll be helpful.
Yes. Remember that it will significantly outperform JSON by 1.5 to 2.5 times and Jiffy, the NIF-based one, except for some cases where it's on par, but it'll be faster than Jiffy even as well. So very exciting. There was a lot of question previously. It was unaccepted. We were just kind of watching it to see, is this actually going to be official? And then the other question is this going to end up in OTP 27? Because it already started the RC phase for OTP 27. So I don't know any final word on that yet.
But we do know it's accepted. So hip, hip, hooray. I am excited about it. I'm actually even more excited now that it's going to be like incorporated into JSON. So like, I don't need to do anything. In other words,
you'll just get it.
Yeah, just get it. Next up, we got some interesting news that Postgres has been repackaged into a WASM library. We've talked about this before, but this is a little bit different. I'll drop a link to it. I think it's an effort done by Electric SQL and Neon, two companies. But this is being called PG Lite, L-I-T-E. It is a WASM Postgres build packaged into a TypeScript client library that enables you to run Postgres in the browser, Node.js, Bun, whatever, with no need to install any other dependencies. It's only 3.7 megabytes gzipped. That's a little bit different than what we talked about last time, which was that it was an entire VM running in your browser, and inside of that VM was just Postgres. So there's a lot more, you know, weight involved in that. The difference here is that this is literally only Postgres. No, you know, virtual machining going on here in WASM, which I guess is how it can accomplish that smaller payload there of 3.7 megabyte gzipped. Now, what can you do with this? I have no clue, because what are you going to do with that? But this could be interesting, you know, especially like for SQL playgrounds as you're trying to like learn SQL. Like, you totally can see that. Can see that as maybe a way to ship Postgres in small binaries on like smaller devices. Could be interesting. I don't know. But if that is in your realm, you should go check out PG Lite.
Yeah, here's a terrible idea. I'll have PG Lite running in the browser, and then I'll have my LiveView app send messages so it can do JavaScript queries in the browser on the front end. Like, yeah, I think that'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it could be. Like, what that could be like an interesting way to ship Postgres to other people in like a single binary kind of thing, right?
You know, if you get into this idea of you, the customer, own your own data, and then you just really, truly go 100% in on that. I guess you could do that today with a SQLite database, but yeah, it's interesting. I don't know.
Cool.
And next up, Elixir in Action 3rd Edition is now printing. So it's been available previously in a beta form, but now it's like actually finished, it's baked, and you could get a printed copy or the ebook if you prefer that. Right now, it's number 2 on Manning's bestseller list, and if you want to buy it, you can use the devtalk.com or mluric, that's M-L-J-U-R-I-C 3, coupon codes until March 9th for 45% off the ebook. So we'll have those codes listed in the show notes just to make it easy to get those. But we have to give props to Sasha Urich and this particular book, because when I was first learning Elixir, I tried a couple different books. And really, this one is the one that did it for me, that like really unlocked my brain in thinking a different way, going from object-oriented, thinking about functional programming, and then just kind of getting the vision of what Elixir could be. So I love this book. I think it's a great one.
Yep. Still the de facto one. Glad it's updated. Next up, we'll highlight a couple of language server releases, right? We've got 3 of them now, so Hang tight. Here we go. Next.ls is now on version 0.18, and some recent highlights is that autocomplete now works for kernel functions, so that's pretty nifty. There's also a new code action to fix your unused variables. So I think what that means is your compiler is warning you that this thing they used, just underscore it. And then v.0.17 included some opt-in support for their new Spitfire code parser. It's a little bit more error forgiving, right? Like you're still in process of writing some stuff. So that's Next.ls 0.18 includes all that. Next up, we got Elixir LS, the OG. It's now on version 0.20. Some highlights there is that selection ranges can now be used with the language server. Usually you do a lot of stuff that's like knows about the whole file, right? It operates on the whole file, but now you can select like a block of code and only do an action on that block of code. I think that's what that means. All right, another one is completions, hover, signature, help providers are now able to display the at doc and other attribute data from the currently edited buffer. That's good. That's just a way to be like accurate. And then last up, the hover provider now returns markdown with working links to hex docs and Erlang documentation. I'm focusing on the word working here, so maybe it didn't work before, now it does, or maybe they're just including it for the first time, who knows. But that's Elixir LS version 0.20, so get your upgrades in. Last up, we got Lexical LS, which is on version 0.5.1. This is all of a time of recording, obviously. That one had a little, I don't think it was a hiatus because development was continuing, but there was a gap in releases. So there is a now newer release for Lexical. And this one includes support for Elixir version 1.16, multiple improvements to the hover pop-up, undefined variable diagnostics errors for Heeks templates, code action for suggesting function names, which is nice, and completions for type specs, which is pretty cool. And goes without saying, all of these include a bunch more changes, bug improvements, stability improvements, probably new bugs. So we'll see. But these are all great releases. So if you've got your editor set up or pinned against specific versions, might be time to bump those versions, get yourself some faster, stronger, better, faster LSPs going on.
And next up, I was noticing some things on social media where people are talking about the Zed editor and highlighting that it now supports Erlang. So I've been a little bit confused, like, what is this Zed editor? Apparently, Zed is a high-performance multiplayer code editor from the creators of Atom and TreeSitter, and it's also open source. So if you remember Atom, it was a precursor to VS Code. Microsoft VS Code actually hired away the developer for that was working on Atom and started doing full-time work on VS Code, and Atom just languished, and it just kind of fell out of maintenance. Do you have any more experience or insight here, David, on Zed as an editor?
Yeah, not much. I'm a NeoVimmer myself, but yeah, the history there on Atom is pretty spot on. It was maintained by GitHub, and then Microsoft purchased GitHub, you know, a while ago.
Right, yeah.
You know, why I have two editors, I reckon. So Atom, I think, is still technically out there. It's just, like you said, languished. Zed is maybe a spiritual successor to Atom. But the keyword I want to focus on is multiplayer code editor. I thought it's cool that they're using that word, multiplayer. Like, this is like code is a game. My life is not a game. I guess it ought to be. The clincher here is that it's built in from the ground up, I guess, to be, well, shareable. You know, you can share your coding sessions. It's geared towards code pairing, which is pretty nice, right? Like, it's not an afterthought, like in VS Code. Not to say it's a bad experience, but like VS Code has that live sharing session stuff, but I think that's provided through an extension, right? Last I used it, I think you need to have a Microsoft account. I don't use Zed. I don't know how that part works, but anyway, it's developed from the ground up to be multiplayer focused, which is pretty cool. When they say that they support the language, editors are weird, you know, like supporting a language is like, what do I support? Do I support highlighting? Just highlighting? Do I support code actions? Do I support language server? What does that mean? There's so much stuff. And I think generally speaking, when Zed says that they support something, that means that they support it as holistically as they can. So it supports all of that. It's a good experience altogether. May not be as complete as like an expert NeoVim configuration master guru person, you know, that can hook into all of the APIs directly, you know, but Zed is going to be a very hands-off support kind of editor. Anyway, all right, that's enough about Zed. But Zed is a very nice editor, worth your consideration. All right, next up, we got a new live book library. You may be interested in Thomas Millar's new library called Kino Live Reload. This is especially helpful if you are writing and testing a lot of code in live book. So live book, I think, has been a productivity boon for a lot of folks to just like try things out, right? Write scripts in there. But as soon as you have to like move a little bit of that into a library, for example, then your usual productivity boosts might be gone, right? And that's where this new library can kick in and help. It's called Kino Live Reload. We'll have a couple of links to the library, but here's a quote from it and how to use it to give you an idea. You simply mark which cell you want to live reload with, use Kino Live Reload, watch my module, and it will rerun the cell anytime the source code for my module changes. So you can provide a single module or a list of modules. That's the gist of it. So if you're extracting a library and just trying to like test that your library works and you're testing it in Livebook, this would be a really like clutch library to use.
And next up, Fly.io previously announced Tigris, an integrated distributed S3 compatible file storage service, and it has some interesting properties. Well, Jason Stibbs, who's a Phoenix core contributor, demonstrated how Elixir applications can leverage this as a key value store using cool things like Erlang .term to binary to store any data structure we want in a globally replicated cache and what you could possibly do with that. So just some highlights of what Tigris can do. So objects are initially stored in the region closest to the uploader, say Chicago, if that's where they were uploaded to, because that's probably where it's most likely going to be served from. And if the object is requested from, say, somewhere like Singapore, Tigris will transparently move, then cache the object there. So it's like a CDN in that way, but you don't even have to like think about it or configure that. It just works. And if the files are under 128K, then they're just globally cached everywhere. So he started playing with this idea of like, what could you do with this? And one of the ideas that he posits in his blog post that kind of got me thinking is, well, what if I wanted to have process state, like a gen server or something like that? It could be serialized out, and then, you know, I could deploy, redeploy my app or something, or move it to a different region or something like that. And I need to be able to restore my state. And using his approach, you could do it like a key value store where you just like dump the state in there when you're shutting down, reload your state, and just like not lose any state. I thought it was a pretty fun idea. So he explores a few other possible ways you could use something like this. So just thought it was really cool to see him doing it with Elixir too.
Yeah, I came across that blog post when it came out. That's interesting to think about. It's a workflow changer kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Taking away that whole central repository kind of feeling, which is just requires you to rethink things. Very nice. All right, next up, we got Rec, the HTTP library from Wojtek Mok. Rec 0.4.10 was released. There might even be more releases from then. But the whole idea of Rec is that it's a batteries included HTTP client, so it's easy to use, and it uses Finch underneath by default. And one of the most significant changes was the addition of the rec.test module. Probably the best part about all this is the incredible documentation that's written about how to use this. Testing external services is always kind of a pain point, and Rec is trying to make a consistent effort to do that in a smart way that allows you to do asynchronous tests. So rec.test is a breakdown of all the different ways that you can test these kinds of calls. It includes global mocks, local mocks, and configuration-based kind of stuff. It's a good breakdown. So go check that out. That is a pretty important release, I think. And I don't know if anyone else is like me, but recently I've been getting a bunch of like nimble option warnings with Rec. And to make that go away, you need to upgrade. So go check out Rec.
And next up, Bumblebee version 0.5.0 and .1 and .2 and .3 were all released. So Bumblebee is the NX library that's all around hosting and making it really easy to access machine learning models, be it Whisper and doing speech to text or large language models even. So as soon as this new version dropped, I started playing with it and I had some issues I was running into. So shout out to Jonathan Kwosko, fixes that he iterated on to make this all be a smooth experience for other people. So 0.5.3 will get you all this great latest goodness. So just to highlight some of the big items, there's a lot in there because this has been in development for a while. So just some of the big items, Mistral LLM support is now added. A live book example of Llama 2 LLM was added. The seed option to generate serving input was improved. This was like a personal request I'd made, because what would happen is previously, the seed was set when you would launch the LLM model. It was kind of like baked in, not really compile time, but it's baked in when the LLM model was loaded. And so what that meant is if I put in a prompt to the LLM and then did the exact same prompt, it would give me the exact same output every time. So like it would not vary the output because the seed was the same. And so now that's been fixed. It's just really not what you expect. Like if you're using something like ChatGPT, you expect it to be giving you different responses if you give it the same initial prompt. The seed can be passed through the serving, which gives us the option to say, you know, I want to reuse the same seed to get more deterministic output if you're wanting to use it for something like tests. So very cool. There's lots of other changes and improvements in Bumblebee there. Great to see all that work.
All right, next up, we got NX 0.7. 0.71, I think, is also released. This includes the EXLA's MLIR implementation. If you knew what those acronyms meant, then good for you. Pat yourself on the back. You are an AI expert. Which all this opens up a range of support for new possibilities, but that includes quantization and Apple Metal support. If you don't know what quantization means, that's not quantum computers. All that means is a way to reconfigure a model that's made up of 64-bit values to be truncated to, say, 16 bits. This does imply that you lose some precision, but it also means that some of these large models, the ones that take up gigabytes and gigabytes and gigabytes of RAM, will possibly now work on your dinky little computer. So that's nice, but you know, as with any loss of precision, that just also means that things may not be as accurate as you thought they would be, but it works. Also, the potential for taking advantage of the Apple Silicon and the ML features in those chips, that's a big deal. So that's very nice. So that's NX 0.7.0 or .1. They include these changes, so go check those out.
And last up, the Elixir LangChain library, which I created, it was updated for these new Bumblebee changes. This is to take advantage of all that, everything I was just talking about with Bumblebee, right? So this makes it easy to have a chat conversation with an LLM hosted by NX and Bumblebee. So previously with the LangChain library, I used it to talk with OpenAI's ChatGPT, right? Having a chat conversation with that with my Elixir app. And then we've been adding more model support for other types of services. Now, what this makes it possible to do is to have a self-hosted open source model like Llama 2, Mistral, or Zephyr, and have conversations with those models on my own hardware. Using the same library, what that means is my application code doesn't have to change, right? I can just swap and say, I want to have go to ChatGPT. Oh, now I want to try the same stuff against Llama 2. Now, how does that work against Mistral? That's been really fun to work with. Basically, each one of those models has a different format for how conversation text needs to be formatted. It's based on how those models were trained to expect it. So I hope to have some more to share on that soon, showing how we can do some fun things with that with Elixir. And that's it for the news. Elixir and Phoenix are incredible. They make it possible to quickly build highly resilient and reliable systems capable of operating at incredible scale. Fly.io is a great place to host Elixir apps. You can deploy your app to multiple regions around the world with a private network linking them all together, so your app can cluster and globally do some incredible Phoenix magic. Give your users a more responsive UI while writing less code and moving the app closer to your users without needing an ops team. Check out fly.io for your next Elixir app. Today, we're being joined by our special guest, Philip Brown. Philip, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we had you on with us in episode 133, where we were talking about your previous service that you had, prize.com. And we wanted to bring you back on as part of our special series that we're doing on all the things that are around the Elixir system. Not so much the Elixir system itself and how we're solving interesting problems on the beam, which we love talking about. But with this series, we wanted to meet with people who are doing interesting things in the ecosystem, but specifically how they're doing it, like all of the other stuff, the business stuff that goes into it. So one of the things I just want to point out is I've worked at lots of companies. There's never been an ideal solution that we had of like, this is the best way that we could possibly do this. No, it's like we've always recognized, oh, this could always be better. So what we're talking about today isn't about the perfect or ideal setup. Lots of times it's really kind of like the MVP of bootstrapping a business. And then we want to also think about how this changes for different size businesses, you know, the bootstrapping startup to the small business to the medium-sized business, the types of solutions we use, they're going to be different. So we want to talk about the kinds of things like metrics and emailing and business intelligence and all that stuff that supports our Elixir systems in our companies. So I'm really excited to get into all that with you. But before we go there, maybe you can first tell us a little bit more about yourself. Like, where do you live and what kind of work are you doing?
So my name is Philip Brown. I live in a city called Newcastle upon Tyne, which is in the northeast of England in the UK. I've been a software developer since 2010. I think I discovered Elixir in 2016. I think that was the year that I first wrote a blog post. And so that's kind of like the indication that I felt comfortable enough writing Elixir that I was willing to publish a blog post about it and get ripped by the masses of the anonymous internet users. So yeah, I dabbled with Elixir for a few years whilst being employed. I was doing PHP previously. And then in 2019, I decided to quit my job to do Elixir full-time as a contractor. So I did that for a few years. And then, the last time we spoke, I'd taken some time off from doing contracting to work on Prize.com. Which was a project management application that used machine learning for recommendations and insights to basically give you recommendations and insights for better ways to work, like what's the most important thing to work on next and that kind of stuff. That was obviously built in Elixir, used a very early version of NX and Axon. I want to say it's the first production usage of NX and Axon, and I'm willing to say that until someone comes along and proves otherwise. So I'm just going to take that mantle. The floor is open to somebody disputing it. And then actually a couple of weeks later, I decided to shut Prize down. Whilst it had customers from almost day one that it went live, I felt like I was a long way off from finding product market fit. It was like the project management industry is like notoriously extremely competitive. The bar for product quality is like extremely high. You know, you have people coming out the gate raising $10 to $50 million. Mm-hmm. You know, they build a world-class team, and here I am, I feel like I've brought a, you know, like a damp cloth to a gunfight. I just, you know, I was just, you know, I'm still bullish on the product and all the kind of ethos of the product. I wasn't the right person. Like, I didn't really want to go out and raise a load of money and do it. I'd built everything from scratch, like all of the machine learning from scratch, all of the data from scratch. And it was kind of at the point where, you know what, you could just use OpenAI, like an LLM, and probably get better results. And like, it's like an API request away. Like, you know, suddenly this technology competitive advantage that I felt that I had was kind of just washed away by OpenAI. You know, it was getting towards Christmas and I kind of just like, you know, I'm just going to stop doing this. Yeah, in the January, started doing contract work again. Since then, I built Haystack, which is a search engine built in Elixir. So it's like an open source project where you can just drop it into your Elixir application. You've got full text search, but written in Elixir. Most recently, I've started working on a project with a friend, Richard Taylor, called Elixir Merge, which is a daily newsletter that aggregates content from the Elixir community while still contracting during the day.
Nice. Yeah, there's a lot of different things that we can talk about with you, which I think is great. You know, like, you have exposure to solutions that people are using through contracting. You know, those are like the medium to large size companies. Then there's the stuff you bootstrapped yourself, what was helpful for you at that stage. And one of the things I just want to point out is that none of these are paid endorsements that we're talking about with the different solutions that people are using. And we're also just making sure that we understand that these are the solutions that are right for this particular team at this time, right? It's not like this is the end-all, be-all definitive answer for anything. So hopefully that can be useful for the rest of us as we are similarly in the same kind of space and we are have some of these same questions. And what's been working well for you and what's been working specifically with Elixir? You know, so that's what we're looking forward to talking more about. So maybe let's just talk a little about you talked about Prize, you talked about Elixir Merge. What are the companies that we're talking about? Like, you don't have to name any of the contracting companies that you work with, but maybe you can describe the types of software that it is. It's like, is it B2B or B2C? Are these big? Are these, you know, enterprise-y? You know, like, what kinds of systems and solutions are we going to be talking about?
It's a mix of B2B and B2C. The vast majority of the companies that I've worked for have been startups or very early stage startups within companies. Literally, I'm creating the repository. Like, my first task is to create the repository. And so, yeah, like, all of the companies are basically like, we're building an MVP. We're kind of figuring things out. You know, we have an idea of what we want to build, but it's a process of iterating with customers, speaking to users, building out an idea, running experiments, fleshing things out, rather than this is a critical service that must never go down. It's like, you know, if it goes down, like, people are probably not, you know, like, people will be a bit annoyed, but like, it'll not be the end of the world kind of thing. Yeah.
Like, is this like greenfield projects within a company, like maybe internal tools or things like that?
Where it's been like a rewrite of a system. So like, they've got an existing system. So like, the last couple of projects I've worked on, actually, there is an existing system. And for whatever business reason, they've decided to rewrite it as Elixir. So there's an existing system to compare against an existing system to migrate people from. There's like lessons learned from the previous system, you know, or mistakes that be made that don't want to be replicated again.
Because we're talking about lots of different ways that this might fit in, maybe we'll just approach this one from the idea of like monitoring solutions. We can start with that one and just see what have you used at these different types of places, you know, because when you talk about existing systems, I imagine there's some inertia of saying, well, we're already using system X to do monitoring, and we want to continue to use that because it fits into notifications for support staff or anything like that. Then you're saying, well, how does that work with Elixir? Do I have good support there? You know, so maybe we can start with the monitoring systems and what you've been using or had been exposed to there.
I've had an issue in the past with that, actually. Like, I shoot myself in the foot. I've used these other services before, but this time I'm going to use something different so I can just get exposure to all the different services. I might like it better, you know, but in either case, it's like always going to be more of a time suck than usual. But what do you do?
In the two most recent cases of that, the new thing that has been built has been... There's like a hard difference between the existing system and the new system. And so there hasn't been the pressure or influence to use existing services or anything around like tools or technologies.
Total clean slate. That's cool.
Yeah. So it's been a total clean slate. In terms of like monitoring, I've used Sentry since, I want to say 2015. And it's kind of become like a comfortable pair of slippers for me where, you know, I know exactly how to set it up. You know, I know how to like use it. And there is an element of, I think there could be better things out there. Before we recorded this today, I actually listened to Tyler Young's episode where he was talking about, was it AppSignal? Heard good things about that, but it's like Sentry is doing a job for me. And the job is, if something goes wrong, I kind of want to be, no, I want to be notified about it. I don't want to just discover that something has been wrong for a while. and it does that job. I do feel like I'm missing out on things by using Sentry and not using perhaps other things on the market that can do, you know, like Tyler was talking about, it does logging and it does, it integrates with like Oban and things like, and stuff like that. But yeah, like I think a common thing that I find with Elixir, probably a strong reason why I use Elixir and I continue to advocate for Elixir, is that you can get away with using very little. And like, that's kind of my philosophy with these things as well. Like, Sentry does the job for me. I'm probably not going to make a drastic change unless I hit a problem and suddenly Sentry is woefully not good enough for whatever reason. Fortunately, I haven't hit that point yet. Or if I hit a problem where if only I had these other tools available, then I think that pain would get me to investigate a switch to something else.
After talking with Tyler, he was bullish on AppSignal. And I have used AppSignal before with Ruby on Rails and Elixir projects at larger, medium-sized companies. And then when I look to, I'm starting to launch my own thing, and then I look at the price, it's like, ooh, that's a little steep, for me who's not making any money on my project right now, right? It's like, that's what I mean. The solution really needs to fit where we are with our project right now and our needs. So Sentry is much cheaper. It's not a one-to-one comparison, right? And then I just want to throw out another one that I was looking at and considering. It's an older one, but it's being maintained. It's from YWorks. It's called Boom Notifier. So all it does is it just sends you an email if there's an unhandled exception. It's free. If I have email, then I at least know that something happened, right? So it's not like a user had something happen and blew up for them, and I don't know unless they reach out and tell me. So anyway, lots of different options, different levels of whatever's appropriate. So Boom Notifier, a free one, send you an email. Sentry also looks like a great option too. So I think we've got three different ones. In terms of Sentry, does it have really good Elixir support? Have you been happy with how easy it is to integrate and get that set up?
Yeah, I think the Elixir SDK has been getting some love recently. I've noticed some updates. It's fairly easy to set up. The documentation's there. I've used Sentry for a long time, so perhaps I'm slightly blurred with that. I think when I set it up, I'm basically just copying and pasting from a previous project. And yep,
That's what I do.
So to a certain extent, I'm kind of probably biased in that, great. I just copy these. I can either go to the commit where the last time I implemented it, or, there's some config that I just copy over and change the, the credentials. And yeah, I think similar to what you were saying with Boom, my usage of it is something went wrong. I need an email and I click into it. I can see what line it was. And based on the error, I don't really need a great deal of information more than that to be
Yeah, you get a good idea of what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I just need to be told that it went wrong and on what line. And then I can be oh my God, I'm so stupid. I did something wrong here. It's obvious. It's painfully obvious.
Yeah.
And when I've needed to kind of delve a little bit deeper, I've never felt that I'm missing information, but then that might be that, if I've just never had that information presented to me, that, it could be that's why I'm missing it, but because I've never had it, I don't feel like I'm missing it.
One of the things I want to think about is these solutions like AppSignal, like Sentry, they do a lot more than just a Boom Notifier, just send me an email when something goes wrong. Maybe they help with logs, with AppSignal. Maybe they give you server monitoring, how is my RAM usage? How is my CPU usage? Are you getting any of that kind of insight from Sentry? Is that helpful?
To be honest, no. You can get that from Live Dashboard, but it's more, I just don't even think about it until I get a problem. And I think I'm more likely to get a database memory problem than a server memory problem. I can't even think of the last time that happened.
It probably depends on your domain if you're doing a lot of intense processing of files or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to throw a proposal out there for all those that are listening too. These are great solutions, Sentry, AppSignal, all that kind of stuff, error tracking, right? Exception tracking, But let me just buck the trend a little bit. How about don't do that and don't send logs anywhere? Here's what you do instead. Tracing. Just use tracing. Only use tracing. Metrics are those little point in time measurements that can be helpful for measuring your VM memory, CPU usage, that kind of stuff, periodic measurements. But
that's helpful for letting you know that yesterday around lunchtime, something happened. What happened?
Yeah. But any application logic where you're doing a SQL query or a request cycle, something like that. only do traces at that point. Because with traces, you have the opportunity to link backends to front ends and to other services, to your Postgres database even, I think. You can set up the breadcrumbs automatically between these functions, right? With like error tracking, you have to do that stuff manually, but it's the same mechanism. You're still stuffing metadata into your process dictionary that your reporter will then just transfer along with it. It's just that traces, and by traces I mean OpenTelemetry just kind of builds all that stuff in for the most part. Like, you're creating a span of like this, or this trace between these functions, right? And it tracks all of that stuff. And when you spawn a new process, you have to like kind of stick that baggage into that new process so the trace can continue. But that, well, I forget what it's called, baggage ID or whatever. Like, I think your front ends, if they are separate, like if you've got a React app or something like that, you'd have to kind of do the same thing there. But when the React app makes that API call, you kind of have to set up your like client to your backend to also transfer that baggage ID for that trace to continue, and therefore give you that holistic view of everything that's going on. You just don't get that with like just exception tracking or just logging. The most you get with logging is Phoenix's like ability to, or default behavior to stick in a request ID. So you get a little bit of that, but you still can't really link that to like the front end of like, they don't care about the request ID. They don't have that anyway. And so like you said it earlier, and I've been thinking about it, like that Elixir applications can get by with so little, but then we pile on three or four different solutions for tracking like logs and metrics and then error exception stuff. Like, why not just use one thing and call it tracing and have all of the info you could want in there? You can count your traces, you know, like a lot of metrics can also just be counts of traces. Like, you can get a lot out of that. I don't know. Did I just blow anyone's minds here? I probably blew a bunch of wallets just thinking about that. Traces are probably a lot more expensive, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
I would extend that call out to you, dear listener. We would like to hear what you are doing. What do you find valuable? And, you know, just send us a message, tag us on Twitter, something like that. What we really want to know is, what size business are you? Is this like a large team, small team, single person startup? And what do you find is helpful for you and works for you? It's like with tracing, I think that's really cool. I think one of the challenges there is people who are coming from other languages, other frameworks, they are accustomed to whatever they used for that other framework, right? It's learning a new set of skills for how do I debug a runtime system on the beam. It's a different thing. There's a lack of awareness. That's not one of those things that we often cover in a, you know, here's how you do Phoenix coding book, right? You know, it's not in there. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I love the sound. It's like Elixir Zen, that like, okay, you know, just use this one thing. I think that's kind yeah. of what I was probably alluding to, where Sentry is just like my comfortable pair of slippers. And yeah. So that's just what I use. But like what you describe does sound appealing. Do you have any like resources where I can just go and learn that? Or like what services do I need to use? Like, yeah, you've given me a beautiful vision.
Yeah, I wish I did. There should be.
Yeah, you've given me a beautiful vision, but then you need to tell me like, okay, how do I achieve that vision now? I'm sold. You've sold me. Now, like, deliver the product for me, please.
Yeah. All right, David, where's the course? You should write a course and sell it for millions of dollars.
There should be something there. You know, the exception tracking is like, it's appealing because like, well, that's the first thing you think of. It's like, well, how do I know if anything's wrong with the app? I need a notification. Well, that's exactly what exception tracking is doing. But if you're just doing traces, that's not inherently about exception tracking, but you can get that out of the traces, you know, that the, and by that, I mean like in Elixir, you got the telemetry hooks in there. And so one of those telemetry hooks is going to be like an exception, or a bad HTTP request that happened somewhere or whatever, you know, like you kind of have to like bake that in and set up alerts when those counts happen or whatever. If you're used to like logging some metadata somewhere, you kind of have to put that into the trace as metadata. And then there's probably other considerations too, like the trace payload can only be so big, but a logger payload can be larger. There's surely trade-offs here, and I'm probably simplifying it too much, but yes, the vision is there. I think there should be something written up for that. And Don't think that's me right now. But I could. I would love to.
I think, frankly, if you added, there might be some community tooling that would help to say, these are all the telemetry events that are meaningful, and how do I signal external alerts based on certain events?
Yeah.
Drawing that connection of, you know, maybe a library drops in, it's like, this sends an email, this sends a Slack notification, you know, whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. And the ease of use is the other part of it. Like with Sentry and Honey Badger and AppSignal, like they have these libraries that'll hook in directly. They know what to look for, and it's much more plug and play. But with OpenTelemetry, that's a protocol. You know, that's a pattern. They're not a provider,
right?
You know, so you still have to have a provider take in those traces, give you meaningful graphs from those, and allow you to set up alerts on that. So like, there's several providers. I don't know offhand if Honey Badger, AppSignal, Sentry are supporting like traces specifically, like just off the top of my head, they might. So you might have to go check, but they probably started with exception tracking. That's what they're known for, but they also have these other offerings like you're talking about, you know.
Well, we got to keep moving. We got more to talk about. So I want to give Philip more opportunities to share what he's been doing in other areas as well. I'm thinking about scaling. There's different needs for different types of scaling. Like if it's a MVP and you have a very small set of users, you're not going to hit any scaling issues unless you're on like a really underpowered machine. But then what are you seeing with some of these contracting companies? Are you aware of like the type of scale that they work at? Because sometimes you have burst traffic. Like Cade, he's talked about how they would host live events and you get this thundering herd problem where a whole bunch of people come all at once and that causes scale issues. Or I've worked at companies where it's seasonal and it's, you know, we have to scale up around this time of the year and then we can actually scale down if we want to for the rest of the year because of just that traffic patterns. What are you seeing or thinking about when you think of scale?
Yeah, to be honest, this is kind of a boring answer. All of the projects that I've used recently, I've used Fly either as the contracting client or that's who I use for like my personal projects as well. And yeah, it's just not been an issue. You know, it's not like a live stream type of workload. Mm-hmm. Or it's not like, you know, like a Black Friday type thing, you know, it hasn't been like e-commerce or anything like that. It's been like consistent workloads. So with like Elixir Merge, you know, we're sending like thousands of emails a day, but it's dripped throughout the entire day. We send at 8 a.m. of the subscriber's time zone. So we just have like an O-band job that is just like dripping them out over the course of the day. We now have like a public front end which gets traffic. But again, we haven't had like a huge spike. We've never posted it to Hacker News or anything like that. And so like, we've never experienced that yet, but I can't imagine it would be a problem. Like the work that we've been doing just hasn't really had that problem, I guess.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Most companies probably don't have that type of issue that they even need to think about. So then I'd love to maybe move into some of these other things. Like you mentioned emailing, right? There's lots of different ways to send email. That's one of the common things that applications need to do. You know, if you have passwords, people need to send emails. Like for Forgot My Password, if there's newsletter things, you know, you can use external systems and maybe it doesn't even touch your system. Like what do you find helpful for doing emails?
For the last couple of years, really, I've used Postmark as my email provider. I've used SendGrid in the past. I think I've used a few others, but Postmark is, I think it's the most friendly to use. Like it's just easy to use, easy to set up. The admin console where you can like log in and do stuff is the best that I've experienced. Like whenever I've used SendGrid in the past, it's kind of like, it almost, you know, it's been going for a long time, but parts of it seemed half-baked or like forgotten about. Whereas Postmark, it's the easiest to use and it's the most friendly to use. With Elixir Merge, we use Postmark. So I think Postmark is probably one of the more expensive services you can use to send emails. In my opinion, like it's the easiest to use. But with Elixir Merge, we've set up a multi-mailer type system where we use Postmark, but we also use Resend as another provider, and like basically the emails, the providers are just chosen at random whenever we need to send an email. So we split across two services. So like Resend had it was like a 9-hour outage the other day. And so we could just switch over to completely use Postmark instead, which was nice. I think longer term, we may add other providers. And so we can say, like, say Postmark was better at delivering to Gmail, for example, we could always let, you know, use Postmark. If one of them drops out, we've always got a pool of other providers. I think longer term, we'll probably need to use AWS because their SCS services, you know, is by far cheaper than like any other. I think Resend is basically built on top of AWS SCS. And so it's like, you know, it's a lot cheaper. Whenever I'm working with contract clients, I'll say, you know what, let's just use Postmark because the difference in price is like tiny at that stage. It doesn't really make a difference, but it's easiest to just use and get going with. And that's basically the same with my personal projects. You know, like, okay, I could probably do it slightly cheaper using a different service, but it's so much easier and I have so much more confidence and just, okay, I know how to set this up. Like, it's dead easy to use. Like, I'm just going to use this. And then longer term, if the product that I'm building is a roaring success and I'm looking at the sky high email, like, you know, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
I can then switch to a cheaper option or to a different option at that point.
Yeah, that speaks to the idea of, unless email is the service you're building, then what you're actually caring about is like emails, it's an implementation detail. It just, I need something to go out by email, but you know, what service I use isn't as important. Amazon's SES is the simple email service. I've used that in the past. It's been a long time, but like, I know a lot of things have happened with email, like, you know, DKIM and all these other types of certificates that you need to use to and set up on your domains and things to ensure you aren't being flagged as spam. So I imagine maybe is that something you felt Postmark did a really good job at, was helping to get high quality emails out or something?
It kind of just works out the box for those kind of things. We've not had any problems with deliverability at all with Postmark. With the ability to switch between Postmark and Resend, you know, in Phoenix, it's just like switching the Swoosh provider. It's so easy. There is things that you need to set up still with Postmark to have good deliverability. But again, it's not. The thought of setting up AWS and SES kind of gives me a headache. And so like, I'm happy to kind of
just
like
the idea of it.
Yeah, I'm happy to punt on that for a while, quite a long time, actually, until we like hopefully we reach that stage where we're sending millions of emails a day. Then it's like, okay, yeah, it kind of makes sense to deal with the headache now.
Now I care. And maybe I'll just, at that level, pay someone to figure it out for me. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One of the things I think is interesting is this idea of user behavior tracking. You know, how are they using my application? What percentage of people have even seen this important page? You know, that kind of thing. Like, do you find any tools available or what do you use that helps you get insight there?
With Prize, I did a couple of things. So like the first really basic thing I did was I just send a Slack message to a private Slack organization that I had, which was just a channel that was like, okay, someone signed up, someone did this thing, which was really helpful in that like I've always got Slack open, and so I could just see a stream of activity, and you know, if nothing was happening, then okay, that's pretty bad. But like, if I could see, like, you know, oh, a certain person signed up, or like getting lots of activity, you know, I add a new feature, it's getting lots of activity. Prize had that idea of integrations with other services, and so I generated pages on the marketing site for like basically every combination of services, and then I could track that on using Plausible to say, okay, this integration combination is getting traffic, so I can prioritize that one to build next rather than having no insight to lead me to what I should build next. I used a tool called Microsoft Clarity. So it was a free tool when I used it, and that was like a year ago probably. But that provides like heat maps across either the website or the web application, so you can see where people are clicking. If people are like, you know, like clicking on something, but it's not actually a button, like perhaps that's like a user experience thing that's kind of broken.
Oh yeah, like you have something that kind of looks like a button and people are trying to hit it.
Yeah, or people are like, yeah, dropping off and things like that. And so I used that towards the end. I like basically set it up for a couple of weeks. It was kind of interesting, but at that point I was kind of like, you know what? I'm not gonna do this anymore. So like, I'm sure you could get a lot more out of it than what I did, but I found that interesting. With Elixir Merge, we have an admin, like it's like a private admin that we use. In the beginning, there was we basically did things in a manual way, which and then we've scripted them so they're no longer manual, but and so we would do them via the admin. So we don't track open rates just because that is just like a minefield of like, you know, these changes recently, like from Apple, where it's just like so unreliable. And it's kind of creepy as well, like who cares if they opened it. But what we track is link clicks. We want to send newsletters that people are clicking on the links because they're interested. That's like the kind of the North Star. Are we providing value to these people, or are they just receiving the emails but they're not motivated enough to click through? And we can reliably track link clicking because, you know, it goes through our server to the source. So yeah, we built an admin to do that. Almost every project that I've built or contract that I've worked on, you end up building an admin to a certain extent. You know, it's like there's something that needs to be done. And if you're a team of developers, of course, you can do it in the database, but then it's a bit safer to do it in an admin. Or if you have like non-developers who need to do things, like you, of course, you need an admin. But it always feels like a bit of a drag to maintain it. Like, you know, it doesn't get the love. It's if there's bugs with it, the bugs with the actual customer or the end user are always prioritized higher. There was a phase of web development where everyone's admin looked basically like Bootstrap.
Yes.
Everybody's admin probably looks like Tailwind UI now. And so, yeah, we have an admin, but it's kind of like, it probably doesn't get the love that it should get because it's not user-facing. I've used Caffe, which is like an open source Elixir project, which kind of you list the schemas that you're interested in, and it kind of like, it provides like a form and you can do like CRUD operations. But to be honest, it feels a bit out of date and rigid. It's not using Live View, for example. So it kind of already feels a little bit out of date in that sense. But then it's good in that if you only ever have to provide like a CRUD interface over individual resources, if you are creating a new post, say, and you want to create like tags, then you'd have to create the tags first and then go into the post, and you like you can't do things like inline and like I think that's always going to be the case with these admins that are like generated from like schemas. There's not enough like smarts about it to be able to do it, or you end up like basically configuring it anyway and like perhaps you probably should have just built it yourself. I'm interested in trying Retool. So that was another thing that Tyler mentioned. So it basically connects to your database, and then that provides like a UI to build up. I think like you can do graphs and stuff, or like interfaces where you can update the data, and it's potentially better than just doing it raw in the database. So you don't have to build all those screens yourself, but I've not used it, but I think that could be an interesting alternative. And then, yeah, I'm not sure if there's a more modern version of Caffe, but yeah, I suspect that any admin package that attempts to do it for you is ultimately going to fall down eventually.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like I've usually end up coding my own admin backends just because I needed to do what I needed to do. And I tie it into my business logic too. So yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned Retool. Are you thinking of like business intelligence, of getting insight into my data? Like, because part of that idea is how are my users using my system? You know, who are the biggest users? So you mentioned Plausible, which is a great way for getting web analytics that's not invasive at all. Like Google Analytics has gotten a lot of heat for that. So Plausible is a great way for doing the web analytics. But then there's like the who has the most database records, who has the most, you know, whatever is important for your business, like that they have engaged the most in this meaningful way. Because I think what's helpful with that is we can start to then identify patterns like, oh, people tend to bounce if they haven't created this or had this interaction with our system yet. Maybe they're not getting the real value. So I don't know. Is there anything that you found helpful in that way, like the business intelligence stuff?
We have pages in our admin that list subscribers by like the most amount of clicks. So you can see like who's the most engaged people. And then you can obviously see people who are like at the other end of that scale who are just not clicking at all.
Well, I want to throw out one that we didn't talk about with Tyler, but it's an open source one that I've used in the past and I think is a great one. It's called Metabase. It's free. It's open source. You can host it. And then I would suggest hooking it up to like a read replica of your Postgres or MySQL databases. It can help you write the queries, like an auto write the queries help, and then create those charts and dashboards and graphs and things that give you some of that fun business insight. What I love is it's open source and I can just host it myself. So like that's a great one. It may not have all the features of the other things, but it's like, hey, I'll take that.
I know of Metabase, but I've not used it. We kind of have built a homebrewed set of things that we look at. So like a list of like top most engaged subscribers. We run like a weekly job that like inserts into a stats table with the number of subscribers, you know, the percentage click-through rate to see where it's at over time series and like obviously like improve that. One of the things that's quite a bit different with Elixir Merge than other newsletters is that the content that you get is not the same content that everybody else gets. So with a newsletter, an author writes it and then everybody receives the same information. With Elixir Merge, probably more often than not, currently, people do get the same two links. But that's not how it's built. It's built in a way that you get basically two links that you haven't seen that is algorithmically selected for you. And so like the longer term vision with that is, so in the Elixir ecosystem, there are a number of different areas. So you can be an Elixir developer who only ever uses Phoenix, or you can be an Elixir developer who actually never uses Phoenix, but only ever use nerves. You could just do machine learning if you're like a data scientist. And so one of the reasons why we wanted to start was that with a one-size-fits-all newsletter, you kind of get like the best of the content for this week. But there's a lot of examples where there's content out there that you just don't see. You actually, in a previous episode of Thinking Elixir, you included one of my tweets that mentioned the verified roots protocol where you can override it. And it's just like a little nugget in Phoenix that you might not have actually realized was there. And so with Elixir Merge, if we can understand that, okay, Mark is very interested in Phoenix and actually doesn't care at all about membrane, then we can just stop showing you membrane stuff and we can show you more fine-grained Phoenix-related things. And so at that point, we will need to build like a recommendations engine into Elixir Merge based on like the past things that you've engaged with or clicked with and stuff along those lines.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's interesting. As a receiver of the newsletter, yeah, I had no idea it was paying attention to those types of things and tailoring the content. Yeah, you just don't have that visibility. That's cool. Well, we are about out of time, but I want to make sure we have an opportunity to just say, is there anything else that maybe you've learned along the way that you would like to share with Elixir professionals coming up, doing something similar, like any advice that you would give someone if they asked you like, hey, I'm following along kind of the same type of journey you're on or have been, you're a little further ahead. What would you tell me?
Yeah, I'd probably go back to the idea that like you can get a long way in Elixir with very little. I probably wouldn't stress too much about having to use specific tools, or if you're trying to do what I have been doing, which is like build these projects and like try and get people to use them, it's almost like you care more about speaking to people and like it's obvious if something's working or not, and it should be obvious. And if you really have to dig into analytics, it's probably not working. It should be like totally obvious that it's either working or it's not working. And with Prize, I kind of like, I wanted it to work, but you know, it doesn't matter what tools I was using. Like it wasn't gonna like change that. With Elixir Merge, it's like a lot more obvious that like people are using it a lot more than Prize ever was.
Yeah, that's a good point though. Like, you could have spent a lot of time having the best backend system for tracking, logging, and all that stuff. That's not important. It's really building the product is the number one mission, right? And that's what we're talking about here is like, what are the systems around that are helpful? And one of those great valuable insights is, you know, early stage, maybe none of that's really important. Maybe we're getting overly concerned with what we could do And really the most important thing is ship something, make a difference to people so that they engage and that they want to give you money to keep doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, David, I'll give you money for this tracing course. Like, are you going to announce the launch date? Like, you're gonna announce it here?
I'll keep that in mind.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Philip, for joining us and sharing things you've learned along the way, the solutions that have been valuable for you. And also, you know, some of the things that just kind of came through that discussion is how at different companies, different sizes, different things were working well for you. And like, I didn't need that at this level. And this is really helpful at this level. So really value all of that. If people want to follow you or get in touch, how can they do that?
Probably the best place is on Twitter. My username is Philip Brown, just my name, like PhilipBrown. You can sign up for Alexa Merge at alexamerge.com. And if you manage to listen to this episode as soon as it launches, your first issue might include this episode in a meta thing going on there. So yeah, that's what I'm working on at the minute. But yeah, on Twitter otherwise.
Awesome. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us next time on Thinking Elixir.